I'm Annie Apple, and I'm here to invite you to come and listen to my new podcast series, Raising a Pro. It's the most intimate sports-related conversations you will hear. Each week, we explore the journeys of some of your favorite NFL players through the eyes of those that know them best. From Joe Burrow, DeAndre Hopkins, Myles Garrett, Ezekiel Elliott, Nick and Joey Bosa, just to name a few. With exclusive insights and information, we leave no stone unturned. Subscribe now to Raising a Pro on your favorite podcast app.
HD Smartcast.
You're listening to a Hindustan Times production brought to you by HD Smartcast.
Welcome to Worldview, the show from Hindustan Times that looks at foreign policy and international affairs. And as you must be aware, one of the biggest news stories in the foreign policy domain in the last few days was the opening of the Kartarpur corridor by India and Pakistan. We have with us today a very special guest, one of India's former High Commissioners to Pakistan, Mr. TCA Raghavan, who also has written a wonderful book on Pakistan, which you should read. And we are going to discuss the opening of the Kartarpur corridor and what it really means or doesn't mean for India-Pakistan relations. You know, as somebody who has lived and worked in Pakistan, this is not a new issue. I'm sure, I mean, Kartarpur may have, you may have even discussed it at some time when you were posted there. But why did it take so long?
Well, why something takes so long is always very difficult to answer. But I think Kartarpur, the opening up of the corridor, has to be seen in the context of what has happened before. Kartarpur, when it was discussed in the 90s or even the 1980s, did not have the precedent of cross-LOC travel. It did not have the precedent of people across walking across the Wagah Atari border. It did not have the precedent of so many bus services. I think all these precedents gave an accumulated confidence that something like this can be done to address a very long-standing demand of the Sikh community.
And in fact, it's quite a unique arrangement. I mean, for once, people are going across the border without visas, although they need to carry their passports.
Yes, in that sense, this was precisely the demand that because it is so proximate to East Punjab, the procedure of getting a visa was far too cumbersome and some more novel method had to be put in place. And the idea of a visa-free corridor therefore came up in these discussions in about 20 years ago. But as I said, it required the certain weight of accumulated precedents to see how large-scale people-to-people movements can take place between India and Pakistan, and which is why it became possible now. Of course, the present context is entirely different.
Yeah, I mean, I just wanted to ask you about that. I mean, given the fact that there's been quite a bit of tension this year, right from February, first Pulwama, then over Kashmir, were you surprised that this actually happened, that it went ahead?
Well, this discussion has been going on for a year. And I was not so much surprised as interested because it's in many ways something quite new. Most of the earlier major decisions on people-to-people contacts, the Lahore-Delhi bus service, people crossing the border on, walking across the border at Wagah and Atari, the Mirpur Khas Barmer train service, Munabao Kokrabar train service, the cross LOC travel, all those breakthroughs happened when things were looking up in India-Pakistan relations. Kartarpur has taken place when things were not looking up, which is what makes it so interesting. In many ways, leaves open the question of what are the other possibilities.
Yeah, coming to that, you know, I mean, if you really look at the speech that was given by Imran Khan, the Prime Minister of Pakistan, at the opening of the corridor, I thought it was a slightly more nuanced speech than the ones he's been making in the past few weeks, which are all about gloom and doom and the possibility of war. He, in fact, even spoke about, you know, India and Pakistan trying to be like France and Germany. But does Kartarpur really hold out some fresh hope for some kind of a breakthrough between the two sides?
Well, I think in India-Pakistan context, breakthroughs and breakdowns are really two sides of the same coin. But nevertheless, that this such an important decision could first be taken, then negotiated through, and it was not an easy negotiation from the reports which have come out, and finally implemented on the ground at a time when relations were generally on the downswing, shows that how much is possible in India-Pakistan relations. And unlike the theorists of gloom and doom, you should never write off things as being beyond all repair.
What's your take of the current status of the relations? Do you foresee something happening? Because everything seems to have gone totally into a freeze. I mean, even the people-to-people contacts that you referred to, some of the train services, yes, some of the bus services, they've been suspended or curtailed.
Well, I think things have been in a prolonged freeze since January 2016, from the time of the Pathankot terrorist attack. And it's ironical that just a few days before that attack took place, things between India and Pakistan looked really positive, because our Prime Minister had visited Lahore for no other reason than to facilitate the Pakistani Prime Minister. So the freeze since 2016 has continued. To my mind, the essential reasons for it are political, and these are well known. Whether something like the Kartarpur corridor suggests a thaw, I think it will be too early to say. But what the Kartarpur corridor opening suggests are the numerous possibilities which exist. And as I said, one should never take the position that none of these possibilities is practical.
One question that has come up in the past whenever we've discussed Kartarpur, and which even Indian officials often refer to, is the apprehension that certain elements within the Pakistani security establishment may try to misuse the corridor to kind of fan separatism in Indian Punjab, may try to appeal to some of the pilgrims who are visiting and try to influence them in some way. How valid are those concerns?
No, I would say these concerns are valid, but I don't think the concerns are of a magnitude to rule out the possibility of taking political initiatives. I think because those concerns are valid, we have to devise robust security procedures, and I'm sure these will be in place and take into account the fact that we have to rely on the good judgment of the pilgrims visiting these shrines. This possibility, it's not as if this has not been there in the past. Even in the past, there used to be many reports about Khalistanis, about anti-Indian elements, about extremists trying to use the visit by a large number of pilgrims for ulterior purposes. But many people's experience was that the pilgrims themselves were aware of it, and the Jatha leaders who used to be shepherding the flock, so to say, certainly knew how to insulate themselves from such activities. So I think we should devise, and I'm sure we have devised proper security procedures and standard operating procedures. But as I said, we should not use security as a grounds for denying citizens something which very evidently and very clearly they want and have wanted for a very long time.
It was a pleasure talking to you as always. Thank you for coming on the show.
This was a Hindustan Times production brought to you by HT Smartcast.
HT Smartcast.
I'm Annie Apple, and I'm here to invite you to come and listen to my new podcast series, Raising a Pro. It's the most intimate sports-related conversations you will hear. Each week, we explore the journeys of some of your favorite NFL players through the eyes of those that know them best. From Joe Burrow, DeAndre Hopkins, Myles Garrett, Ezekiel Elliott, Nick and Joey Bosa, just to name a few. With exclusive insights and information, we leave no stone unturned. Subscribe now to Raising a Pro on your favorite podcast app.